after the last 2 weeks of doing all sorts of talking, we'll try and cover a little ground today. Let's begin again with chapter 5. We're already a few psukim into chapter 5. Let's see. We're going to do a chapter. Maybe we'll do a bit more than a chapter. David had been king in Hebron for 7 years, says by the vocal Shifte Yisrael David Hebrona, all of the tribes of Israel came to David in Hebron Vayom Rulemor, and they said, Hinenu Atzmecha Ubesorcha Anachnu. We are Atzmecha Ubesorcha, your bones and flesh. Of all things that fascinated me, talk about this, the expression Atzmecha Ubesorcha comes originally from where we said last week, when God brings Chava to man, so Adam says, Zot hapam etzem me'atzamai u'bosar mi'besori. This time it's somebody that I really have a relationship to, because bones of my bones and flesh of my flesh. In last week's Sedra, Lavan, when he's acting nice to Yaakov, says, Atzmecha u'besorcha ata, you're mishpucha. We were all part of the same family. Of course, over here it is Yehuda who come to David in Hebron, and they say, all the tribes of Israel come to David in Hebron, and they say, we are Atzmecha u'besorcha, gam etmol, gam shilshom, even before today, yesterday. We're talking about many yesterdays. Gam shilshom b'hiyot melech aleinu, when Shaul was king over us, you were the one who brought Israel in and out. You led us even in the days of Shaul. God has said to you, you will be the shepherd of my people Israel, and you will be an officer, a prince over Israel. So, put this down. We discussed last week the significance of the fact that it is Kol Shifte Yisrael, all of the tribes of Israel, because what is going to happen in this chapter, and that was the topic of our shiur last week, the establishment of Yerushalayim as the capital of the Jewish people. And this can only be done after David has united all of the people, and all of the Shifte Yisrael, all of the tribes of Israel come and join under the leadership of David. Then David can make the decision which city will be the capital city, because he has the backing of all of Israel. Not 51%, not even 78%. He has the backing of 100% of Klal Yisrael. And we, of course, pointed out the significance, the first of many times in Torah, when the Torah talks about Yerushalayim, as we, and that was the last week's share, that Yerushalayim is never mentioned by name. Never mentioned by name. But it is mentioned the first time around as the Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokecha Mikol Shvatecha. The place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to choose from among all of your tribes, L'shaken Shmo Sham, that his name should rest there. And we discussed the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim and in our other Pshatim, why the choice is only made now. Yerushalayim had already been mentioned by name, but not as a capital. It's going to become the capital of David, and it is the capital city of Klal Yisrael longer than it is the capital city of any other people, though for a period of 87 years, it was the capital of the Crusader government in Eretz Yisrael, 11th and 12th century, for 87 years. Otherwise, it is the capital of the Jewish people. Anyway, all of Israel come to Hebron. They accept upon themselves David by Yovo, called Zikne Yisrael al HaMelech Hebron. First, it is all of the tribes, then the elders, because what's going to happen now is David HaMelech is going to be anointed, and as we pointed out, he's anointed now for the third time. He had been anointed first by Shmuel, second A few chapters earlier, after the death of Shaul, he is anointed by the tribe of Yehuda, but he has not yet been accepted by all of Israel. Now they too give their blessings to David as king. All of the elders of Israel came to the king to Hebron, by Yichrot Lahem HaMelech, David Brit beChebron, Lefnei Hashem, and David made a covenant with them in Hebron before God. By Yimshechu et David HaMelech HaYisrael, and they anointed David as king over Israel. I don't remember if we talked about the idea of Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem is usually used if we're talking about in the presence of the Aron in the Beis Hamikdash, unless of course, contrary to what may be present wisdom, since Hebron is one of the holy cities. Hebron, before Yerushalayim, is chosen. Hebron is the place that is called Lifnei Hashem because of the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. So that's what they say.
They don't even say anything about Hashem, they just say in Hebron.
In Hebron. So they leave out the translation of Lifnei Hashem? You sure this government didn't print that English translation? Hebron is Lifnei Hashem. Hebron is Lifnei Hashem. Ben Shloshim Shana David Malach, David was 30 years old when he became king. Arboim Shana Malach, he was king for 40 years. Bechevron Malach al Yehuda Sheva Shana Mishisha Chadashim. In Hebron, he was king over Yehuda for 7 years and 6 months. Over Yerushalayim, Malach Shloshim Vishalosh Shana. And in Yerushalayim, he ruled for 33 years. I'll call Yisrael the Yehuda. In Yerushalayim, already he is the king of all, over all of Israel and Yehuda. This is the pasuk. I ran through this pasuk last week at the end of the year, and I have a feeling that you may not have been able to capture the essence of this pasuk. So this is where we're going to go to work again. David, the king, and his men went to Yerushalayim. El Hayavusi Yoshev Haaretz. Of all of Eretz Israel, there was one part that had not yet been conquered. And that part was not conquered. I can't even call it a part. We're talking about a part of this city that was inhabited by the Yavusi. And for all intents and purposes, what we are really talking about is the area, let's describe it as from Eish HaTorah's new building until the other side of the Har HaBayit. That means there are the... Yerushalayim has... the eastern hills and mountains, which are Har HaBayit. There are the western hills. The fact is the Rova is on the hill facing Har HaBayit. The Rova, it seems, had already been captured by Yehuda. It was Har HaBayit where the Yavusi still lived. And David decides this is his first act as king, that he comes to Yerushalayim, to the Yavusi, Yoshev Haaretz, Vayomer leDavid Lamor, and it had been said to David, so saying. Now, what this really means is that David attempts to make a deal whereby he will take the city without a battle. He is ready to talk some kind of peace, an arrangement. No relationship to any present kind of arrangements. Yes?
Are you saying that David was king only on part of Yerushalayim, and now he's not king?
No. He hasn't been king in Yerushalayim at all. For 7 years he's been king in Hebron. When he is crowned king by all of Israel, his very first act is to conquer Yerushalayim. But, of course, Yerushalayim, it's already 300 years since they've come into the days of Yeshua. And part of Yerushalayim was in enemy hands. Part of East Yerushalayim, part of it was in enemy hands. At the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, it said that Yehuda had conquered Yerushalayim. But at HaYavusi, Yoshev Yerushalayim, the Yavusi who lived in Yerushalayim, Lo Yachlu, they were unable to conquer. Says the Gemara, Lo Yachlu, what do you mean Lo Yachlu? They weren't able to. They were able to conquer all of Eretz Yisrael, they weren't able to. And that's going to bring us into the pshat of this pasuk. there was a covenant, a treaty that had been entered into between Avraham and Avimelech, that there will be no war between my children and your children and your great-grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, four generations. And it seems that descendants of Avimelech are still alive, and they are the Yevusi. And therefore, they say that there was an agreement, there was a declaration of principles that was made by Avraham, and therefore you cannot come and conquer this city. It would be a breach of our agreement, a breach of our agreement. There is, huh? Sarah, you can't ask such questions. We Jews don't break agreements. Well, watch. What's fascinating is there's a medrash that says that the Yevusi, and we'll see some proof in the Psukim, the Yevusi were from the family of the Chiti. The Chiti were the ones from whom Avram bought the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. And the deal was, in the contract, in the small print, it said, you can have the Ma'aras HaMachpelah if you keep hands off Hara Maria. So the Medrash says. And that was the agreement. If so, of course, it makes Chevron more Lifnei Hashem than before. It means Chevron is the card that he was able to play, but he had to forfeit for a number of generations. He had to forfeit the right to Har HaBayit. So therefore, let's read this pasuk. From the pasuk, it seems that there's communication between David and though the Yevusi who live in Yerushalayim. Vayomer leDavid leMar, and it was said to David, so saying. In other words, there was a message that was sent to David. The message sent to David is in response to a message that David sent. And you have to understand, this message that's being said to David most probably is one of the first great statements in history, which great statements? And you're going to see another one in this parak, fascinating. Don't shoot till you see the whites of their eyes. Well, I'm going to wait for you to show me in this parak where that appears. Or, if I want to be a little cynical, do you know what they're saying to David? Har HaBayit Biyadenu. I repeat, Har HaBayit Biyadenu. It's ours. And how do they send this message to him? They tell him, Lo Tovo Heino, you shall not come here. Ki im hasircha ha'ivrim v'hapischim. You cannot come into this city unless you remove the blind and the lame. Lamer, to say to David, again, Lo Yavo David Heino. David shall not come into this city. I think last week, right at the end of class, I gave you six pshatim in this difficult pasuk. The very fact that there are six pshatim means that it's already a difficult pasuk. All of them before Hashem deal with the pasuk. You shall not come here until you remove the blind and the lame. The Evan Ezra says that the fortress of the Yevusi on Har HaBayit was that strong. It was that strong that even the blind and the lame would be able to protect it. You can bring a mighty army and we'll put blind and lame people up there. We have the mountain, and the mountain is Festung Har HaMoriah. You will not be able to get it. You'll have to remove the blind and the lame who will be able to protect this city. Josephus writes about this battle, that this message, you shall remove the blind and the lame, was the way in which they made fun and they mocked David, which seems to be like the pshat of the Evan Ezra. The blind and the lame will be able to protect the city. There is a completely different approach. One of the Mepharshim says that they put on the mountaintop, on the fortress, they placed blind and lame people. It was an attempt at showing him, Nevuch, if you're going to attack us, do you know who you're attacking? You're attacking the blind and the lame. How heartless can you be? The third shot, we're going to fight to the last man. Even the blind and the lame are going to fight for this city. You're not going to get this city until you destroy us all. This will be the Yavusi's last stand. Some of the Farshim say that Ivrim and Pischim refers to the forces of David. You'll never be able to conquer this city, because in comparison to the strength of this city, all of your mighty warriors are no more than blind and lame. You're a bunch of kayakers. The great Tzahal, kayakers. You will not be able to conquer this city. A fifth shot. You will never conquer the city. Do you know when you're going to be able to conquer the city? I think...
Isn't that similar to the first one? That the fortress was so small?
The first one was that the fortress is that strong...
Even the blind can defend it. Like the fifth one, if it says they can outnumber
it, it's strong. No. The last one that we said is that your, David, your army that's coming against this city... Your army is weak in comparison to the strength of this fortress. Do you know what you are? You're a bunch of blind and lame soldiers. There is a fifth shot, I believe, is... What do you say? There's an expression, you know, it will never happen until... what hair grows? Huh? Palm of my hand? Or what was it that... was it Goldberg? That one I never heard. But what was it in the United Nations? Was it Goldberg? What was his name again?
Arthur Goldberg.
Until hell freezes over. That's what he said to the Russian. They send a message to him saying, "Do you know when you'll be able to conquer this city? When you'll heal all of the blind and the lame in this world." That's just like saying until hell freezes over. Until hair grows out of the palm of my hand. You will not come to this city until you're able to remove from this world the blind and the lame. One pshat in Chazal says that they placed idols on top of the walls of Har HaBayit. And how do we refer to idols? The blind and the lame. Einayim lahem velo yiru, raklayim velo yahalechu. In other words, what we call Ivrim and Pischim is the name that we gave to the idols that they placed on the walls. Another pshat in Chazal, I think we're up to number 7 or so. Huh? Because they placed their trust and their faith. They believed in the idols. So they said to him, "You will not come to this city until you remove Baal, Dagon, Ashtaroth, Chemosh, Zoroaster." But the Navi writes that you will not come to the city until you remove the blind and the lame. The blind and the lame are the way we see the idols over there. There is another pshat in Chazal. Going back to the agreement, the treaty that was entered into between Avram and Avimelech, that he will not wage war for Yerushalayim. So they put a statue of a blind man and a statue of a lame person on the Har HaBayit. The blind one represents who? Yitzchak. And the lame one represents Yaakov, this week's Sedra. He limps after the struggle with the Mala. In other words, they're sending a message to David HaMelech. If you dare attack, then you are breaking a treaty that was entered into between Avram for his children after him. And the fact is that Yitzchak was the one who again confirmed the same covenant. Because remember, there was the Be'er Sheva treaty between Avram and Avimelech, and then there was the second Be'er Sheva treaty, Be'er Sheva 2, between Yitzchak and Avimelech. So they placed statues of the blind and the lame to represent Yitzchak and Yaakov. You cannot come into the city.
treaties. They were elsewhere.
The treaties were elsewhere, but Chazal are telling us that Yerushalayim was part of the was one of the agreements that was entered into between Avram and Avimelech, and therefore you cannot come here until you remove the Ivrim and the Pisach. I always say that when we have a pasuk with so many pshatim, it means that they're all true. They're all true. All of these were part of the relationship that now developed between David and the Yevusi. Vayilkod David et Mitzudat Zion, he ear David, and David captured Mitzudat Zion, which is ear David. Now there are two ways to read this pasuk. The pasuk may very well be telling us he conquered Yerushalayim, the fortress that was Zion, which he called, and it became known as Ir David, which means that in the psukim that are going to follow, we're going to have an elaboration. How did it happen? What really took place? And very often in Tanakh, there is the apostate, which is the cloud, tells us a general overview of the story, and then there will be two, three psukim that are going to tell us the details. It could also be that Ir David was part one of the struggle against Yerushalayim. Ir David is the area that's Silwan, that's to the south of the of Har HaBayit. That's outside Shar HaAshba, which means he conquered that. And then the next psukim are going to tell us about the final thrust against the city itself. Bayomer David bayomahu. David said on that day, Kol Make Yevusi, whoever smites the Yevusi, the Yiga Batsinor, a lot of Mepharshim on Tsinor. Tsinor can be the pipe. You know how you a briach, when you close the doors, the gates of a city, and then you put that the bolt? A bolt. It's a bolt.
They used to have some.
Something that would come down like a all right. That which locks the city is called the tzinor. There are those who say that the tzinor really represents David had conquered already the area below the city, which is the area of the Gichon and the Nikvat HaShiloach. Now there were underground passageways whereby one was able to get into the city through the Shiloach or the Gichon. So he says, anybody who's going to be able to make their way in and conquer the city, and here the pasuk doesn't say the end of what David said. In other words, we'll receive a great reward from the king. Whoever will smite the Yevusi v'yiga batzinor and will be able to either remove the bolt or get through the pipes or the passageways into the city, v'etapischim v'etoivrim, and remove the lame and the blind, snuei nefesh David, hated by David, will be rewarded by the king. Al Ken Yomru, therefore they said, this was one of the expressions, Iver upiseach lo yavo el ha bayit. No blind or lame shall come into this house. What the expression was that since the Yevusi had told David, you shall not set foot here, that afterwards it was said that no Yevusi shall ever set foot in the house of David. Mida keneged mida. They said, you shall not tread here. It was then afterwards said, none of them should tread in the house of David. Vayeshev David b'mitzura, and David lived in the fortress. Vayikro lo ir David, and he called it ir David. From this pasuk, it would seem that pasuk 7 that told us that he conquered Zion, and it was ir David, was the total story, and then in Psukim 8 and 9 we are told the details. He called it here David. Vayiven David Saviv Min Hamilo Vavaita, and David built around it. Min Hamilo Vavaita, also difficult things, but what it seems is that they did a bit of a job of landfill. There are areas where they filled in the land in order to be able to build on them. And some of the Farshim say that that's what Yerushalayim Harim Saviv La, and it is Ir Shechubra La Yachdav. there were different hills, there were different mountains, and then David joined them. He joined them by areas of landfill, he joined them by construction. He brought the parts of the city together. He also brought it together because, for all intents and purposes, there really were two cities. I'm afraid to use the terminology, but until David arrived and conquered the city, there was East Jerusalem and there was West Jerusalem. And East Jerusalem was in the hands of the Yebusi, and West Jerusalem was in the hands of the tribe of Yehuda. They had conquered it 300 years earlier. Of course, the divisions between East and West are not the same as today. West Jerusalem extended as far as Mizgav Ladach, Rechov Mizgav Ladach in the Old City. That's as far as it extended. And then further was already the Yebusi part. Yes?
I was there 2 weeks ago in one of the ERW. I took a student there. And they said that the ERW was only 50 Sunan, and the ERW only came to the till where it is Shahash Hosni today. And all the Shlomo, the city, and the western side of the city, they said it was not yet, but only later by Hizkiyahu.
Which part do you call the western part of the city?
It's just the only time, it's just still one. It was just
that was Ir David.
Yeah,
that was Ir David.
Nothing more than that. But only that. And where is the Jewish quarter today, there was nothing built yet.
And according to the so here we have a disagreement. According to the Mefarshim over here, it was precisely where the Rova is. That was precisely the area that was held by Yehuda for 300 years. But they did not move further to take the other mountain, which was Harabayit. So I don't know. You know what I'll have to do? I'll have to go on the tour and find out what the information. I'm sure that there's a great deal of information where there are differences of opinion. But here it seems quite clear. That the area of the Rova was all, you know, by the Rova I mean all of the Rovas. That whole area had already been settled by Yehuda. Huh? Who stops?
He doesn't go and push them out.
Oh, no, he's removed them completely. He has removed, yes, the entire city is now in the hands of David. The entire city.
So what he's done is he's displaced them. And
No. Don't say displaced. Very good that you asked that question. In the last chapter, I'll tell you right away. At the end of Shmuel Bet, at the end of this Sefer, David is going to raise money from all of Israel, and he's going to buy part of the Har HaBayit from Aravna HaYevusi. Now, do you understand? It means he conquered it, say, strategically, it was in his hands. Security of the mountain was in his hands, but he didn't remove anybody from their homes. He didn't transfer. I'm afraid to use all these dirty words. There are so many dirty words today. You know, peace. There's so many. He did not remove them. He ended up buying the Temple Mount, which he had conquered. Now he's going to buy 33 years later from Aravna HaYevusi. And that's why Chazal say there are three places where it says clearly in Tanakh, the Jews bought it. Yaakov buys Shechem in this week's Sedra, this Pasha Pashavua. We know that Chayesara Avram bought the Marat HaMachpelah, and David is going to buy it. That means he conquers them, but does not remove them. And they retain their rights to the land. Ultimately, he is going to purchase it, fair and square. Yes.
There was nothing in the
Har HaBayit. There was a silo, there was a threshing floor, there was a barn. I'm sure that there must have been Kachkalach. A Yevusi by the name of Aravna lived there, and David is going to buy it. It's going to be one of the second major campaign to raise money from Klal Yisrael. He wanted all of Klal Yisrael to have a share in it, so they purchased it. Fair and square purchase. We're going to talk about that purchase when we get to the end of the sefer. So let's move. Okay. Vayishlach vayelech David halach v'gadol v'Hashem elokei tzvakotimo. And David went, continued getting, becoming greater and stronger. The process of the growth and the development of Malchus based David. Vayishlach Chiram elach tzor malachim el David. Chiram, the king of Tzor, sent messengers to David. Va'atzei arazim. He sent cedar wood, the choroshei eitz, and artisans of wood, carpenters, the choroshei even kir, and artisans who make the stone for walls. By yivnu bayit le David, they built a house for David. Vayeda David, David then knew, Kehichino Hashem Lemelech al Yisrael, that God had established him. Hechino comes from the word a kan, a basis, a base. God had established him as king over Israel. Vechinisei Mamlachto, that his kingdom was rising. And what's beautiful about it is, David does not attribute it to himself. He doesn't attribute the greatness to the fact that he is worthy, but ba'avur amo Yisrael, it is because of his people Israel. He personally is unworthy. It is the schus of the Jewish people. Vayikar David od pilakshim v'noshim Yerushalayim, and David took other pilakshim, concubines and wives in Yerushalayim, acharei bo'o mi Hebron, after he came from Hebron, vayivoldu od le David, banim u'banot, sons and daughters were born to him, ve'ele shmot ha'yilodim lo b'Yerushalayim. We were told earlier the names of those who were born to him in Hebron, the ones who are born to him in Yerushalayim, Shamua, Veshovav, Venatan Ushlomo. So here, by the way, this is not Natan Hanavi, but Natan was a common name. And the fact is that Natan may very well have been a kitzur shem from, there was El Natan, there was Yehonatan, there was Netanel. I imagine because names usually had the Shem Hashem. Shamua was most probably Shemayo or something like that, Shashem Shomea. And then he had Yivchar, Elishua, the Neteg, the Ophia, the Elishoma, the Eliyada, the Elifalet, all of them, names of God. Kael Shomea, God hears. Kael Yodea, God knows. Kael Yifalet, the one who saved me, was God. Here comes a fascinating pasuk. Vayishmu plishtim ki mashu et David lemelech al Yisrael. The plishtim heard that David had been anointed as king over Israel. Vayalu kol plishtim levakesh David, and all of plishtim gathered. One of the few times that it says that all of plishtim went up levakesh David to seek David. Vayishma David. David heard that they're coming. Vayeded el hamitzuda, and he went to his fortress. According to the Mefarshim, I have to tell you the truth, the Mefarshim say what angered them and upset them more than anything else was the fact that he had established his capital in Yerushalayim. Let's say that with this pasuk, the historic struggle of 3,500 years for Yerushalayim begins, and nothing has changed ad hayom hazeh. Nothing has changed. Some of the Mefarshim say that the Plishtim were family to the Yavusi and the Chiti who owned Yerushalayim and now had been conquered by David. The struggle for Yerushalayim begins. So when the Plishtim heard that David had been anointed as king, they went up Levakesha David to seek David by Yishma David by Yered Amazon. Uplishtim bo by Yinotshu be Emek Rifaim. The Plishtim came and they spread out in Emek Rifaim. We always have to be able to differentiate between the street and the historic place. The battle didn't take place a few blocks from here, Emek Rifaim. Emek Rifaim was a valley about halfway between Yerushalayim and Bethlehem to the west. In other words, coming up from Plishtim, they passing Bethlehem on the way to Yerushalayim, west of Bethlehem and Yerushalayim was Emek Rifaim. In Arabic, Emek Rifaim is, I give you one guess,
Valley of the Giants.
Baka. So if you want to know why the area...
Baka is not a valley like the
journey's car. Yeah,
are you
sitting...
You're not taking away from me that...
you're sitting next to us, or you're starting up with me. So I had the two of you, two in a row. Yeah, I know. But I'm sorry, the Mefarshim say that Emek Rifaim, Rifaim in Arabic is Baka. There's nothing I can do about it. Fazik, weiter. Let's go. Uplishtim bo, and the Plishtim came by Yinotshu, and they spread out. Watch what's going to happen. There are going to be two battles with Plishtim. And there's an idea that is going to come across in such a strong manner here, it will be proof to things that I've been saying in a number of shiurim in the past few weeks. Uplishtim bo, by Yinotshu, they spread out, be'emek Rifaim, by Yishal David, by Hashem Limor, and David asked of the Urim, the Tumim, he asked of God, ha'e'ele el Plishtim, shall I go up to the Plishtim, hatit neim biyadi, will you give them to my hands? By Yomer Hashem el David, Hashem said to David, alei, because I'm going to give the plishtim in your hands. David, he came to a place, Baal Peratzim, it really was called Baal Peratzim afterwards, where he broke through to the enemy, Vayakem Shom David, and David smote him there, Vayomer, and he said, Paratz Hashem et oyevai lefonai keperetz mayim. God breached before me, broke through before me, broke my enemies before me as a burst and a breach of water rushing out. Remember the name of this place. For next parak, and maybe next week, remember the name of this place. Al Kain, therefore, Kor Hashem Avakamahu, that's why they called the name of the place Baal Peratzim. Vayazu Shom et Atzabeim, and they left their idols there. Vayisa'en David Va'amashav David and his men carried away the idols that they left. Vayosifu Od Plishtim La'alot. The Plishtim came up again. Another struggle. They had been beaten, but that's not enough to end the battle for Yerushalayim. Vayinacho, and again they spread out. Be'emek Rephaim. Vayishal David Ba'ashem. And David asked, should he go up against the Plishtim? Vayomer Hashem said, Lo Taleh. Don't go up. Hasev el achei rehem uvat alehem mimul b'chaim. Do you hear what the Urim Tum is telling? No, don't go up against the Plishtim. Outflank them. Go around from behind them, an area called b'chaim. And just like Baal Peratzim became called Baal Peratzim because God had breached through the enemy, here b'chaim. What does your English say?
Mulberry
trees, Tovmiod. The only part that's Tovmiod really is trees. Nobody is certain what kind of trees Bechaim are. We're talking about trees. It was an area of trees. So they say mulberry trees. I have a picture over here. Mastic is the name of that. It's not Wrigley's mastic, but there's some kind of a tree called mastic. And the only one who would know about that is Yehuda Felix, who lives across the street, the great genius of Hachai v'Hatzomeach in Tanakh, whose wife attends classes here very often. It was a certain kind of tree. Well, so listen, let's call it mulberry trees. But do you hear what God is saying over here? Don't go straight. Don't attack the Plishtim straight. Outflank them. Come around from behind. The Yehien will come to pass. V'shamachot kol tzodah v'roshei habechayim. When you will hear the sound of marching. How does your English translate it? The sound of steps. Okay, at the tops of the mulberry trees. Oz techeratz. Then make your decision and move. Go ahead. Give me the English.
Bestir
yourself. I would never have come up with a word like bestir yourself. Move. It comes from a number of words. It can mean to make the noise of battle, like charge. When Klal Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim, the night of Yitziat Mitzrayim, it says, Lo yecheratz kelev lishono. No dog barked or opened up its mouth. Here, the idea of battle is the great charge, the cry. The other pshat, the one of bestir yourself, comes from a different word in Tanakh, what? Charutz. Yad Charutzim, is that the one of the main streets going through Talpiot, you know, parallel to, what is it? How do the Israelis say it? Payer Koenig. Fire Koenig, yeah. Okay, they can't read that, and it's Payer Koenig. Okay. Yad Charutzim, Charutz means to act with precision, with determination. So do you hear what's happening over here? The same Ribbeinu Shleilam who the first time around, first battle, tells him, go straight up against the Plishtim. And God breaches through the lines of the enemy. For all intents and purposes, it may very well be this first battle of the Plishtim was the only battle that David ever waged where there was a clear hand of God. Paratz Hashem! God broke through the ranks. There haven't been many battles like that in Tanakh since the days of Yahushua. How many battles of that sort? All other battles, even from in the time of Yahushua, there's the battle the great battle, the day on which Yahushua said, Shemesh begivon dom v'yareach be'emek ayalon, let the sun and the moon stop. All the other battles were battles that were really waged in the normal fashion in which wars are waged. It was not the great manifestation of God's loving kindness. It wasn't a Nes Goli. Where else was there a Nes Goli? There was one other place where it seems there was a Nes Goli, and that was in a battle, the battle against Sisera. And it's not even certain, you know, we needed the song of Devorah to tell us that God was waging war in heaven. If Devorah wouldn't have told it to us, the battle would have seemed to be a normal battle, and Jews won the battle. All right, there was something very strange about that battle. There was a downpour. But the heavens opened up, and lately I hear, you know, there's a lot of flooding in the area of Afula. That's exactly where the battle took place. So it could have been, you know, just what a tremendous coincidence that it started pouring, and Sisera and his and all of his tanks and his chariots got mired in the mud, and that was it. Those are in the days of the miraculous. I'm talking about the 300 years when there is no clear miraculous. And not only that, Jews even lose wars. In the days of Shmuel, they lose the battle against Plishtim. They lost many battles against Plishtim. Plishtim captured the Ark of God and they took it away. That was at the beginning of Shmuel. The first battle that David waged over here seems to have been a clear miracle. He says, Paratz Hashem, God breached through like water. Number one, it didn't deter the Plishtim. The second thing is, I want to compare it now with the instructions. Well, it's not Mashiach. A white horse going down.
Going the wrong way.
Going the wrong way. What you see is, I don't remember this from West Hempstead, you know. In this second battle, do you understand what God is doing over here? He is giving him a strategy of how to wage war. Isn't this strange? Why can't God simply go ahead and do the same miracle some Tzveiten Mo? Because what the Rebbein Shalom is teaching him now is struggles from now on and further are going to be waged by man, and God is going to be the one who it will be waged b'siyata d'shmaya, with the help of heaven, not heaven waging war. It was a one-time event that God waged war with the Plishtim. This battle, can you imagine? God is giving him the instructions how to go about the battle. There was another place where something of this sort happened. At the end of Sefer Shoftim, there's the story, the tragic story of Pelegesh Begiva. The terrible, terrible story of Pelegesh Begiva, where really all of Israel gathers to go to wage war against Binyamin. On the first day they wage war, the 11 tribes who've come against Binyamin are routed. Tens of thousands die. Second day, they're routed again. The third day, they ask God, what should we do? So he tells them, go up to wage war with them, but prepare an ambush. And he tells them there also how to go about doing it. What this really represents is the idea of movement from the clearly divine to man acting as a partner with God. The battle is going to take place in such a way where it could be understood that man acted over here, because God is moving again into concealment, because that's God throughout all of history. The author, the architect of the world, the creator. We once used the example, an artist paints a magnificent canvas. What does he do at the end? At the end, someplace down at the bottom of the right hand side, he puts his name. So you know clearly who did it. God didn't write his name down at the bottom. He wants to remain in concealment. It's the responsibility of man to find him. God cannot always act
in a revealed manner. If he acts in a revealed manner all of the time, man is robbed of his ability to exercise free will. Free will and choice can only be exercised by man in a world where he is not faced every minute by the manifestation of God's presence. God must act in concealment. And that's why battle number one was God clear manifestation. Battle number two, he is removing himself to the background. And therefore he says, don't go straight up against them. Come and around from the back and come toward them from the mulberry trees. When you will hear the sound of steps, you know, the wind is going to come blowing through the mulberries. And you know what? It's going to make a lot of noise. Under that noise, David and his men are going to move ahead. The enemy won't notice that that they're coming, because they're going to hear the rustle of the mulberry trees. Do you hear the intricate plan? But what's fascinating is God is going to make sure that at precisely the right moment, the wind will blow through the mulberry trees. Which means, yeah, what seems to us to be coincidence is not necessarily coincidence. The coincidence is very often clearly the hand of God, but only to one who can see and only to one who can hear. Yes.
Is that what you're saying in verse 24 at the end of that verse when it says, "For then shall the Lord go out"?
That's exactly that. You took my thunder. That's the end of the pasuk is going to explain the beginning of the pasuk. V'yehin will come to pass b'shonachat kol tzadav b'rashei habichayim, when you will hear the sound of people marching at the top of the mulberry trees. What it really means is all the rustling is going to be the noise that sounds like people marching. Oz techeratz, then move. Ki oz yotza Hashem lefanecha. Then you should know that God went out before you, lahakot b'machaneh plishtim, to smite the camp of plishtim. It won't seem that way to the observer down below, but you should know that that's what's happening. And therefore, the battle now becomes a battle in which there is a partnership between God and man. And something as simple as the wind rustling through the trees is the Yad Hashem, that's the hand of God. There, as far as the Jewish people is concerned, there is no such thing as mere coincidence. That mere coincidence is mighty God. Vayaz David Kain, Kashet Sivo Hashem. Beautiful. David did that as God commanded him. Vayachet Plishtim. You see the partnership. The second part of the pasuk says, who smote the Plishtim? David smote the Plishtim. But what? He did it, Kashet Sivo Hashem, as God commanded him, and he smote from Gevar ad Boach HaGaza. Gevar is north of Yerushalayim, on the way to Neve Yaakov, and Gezer is near Bethlehem. That area, Hebron, in that whole area, he smote the Plishtim. So what has been established over here is Malchus Beis David. Yerushalayim is the capital. The inhabitants of Yerushalayim have not been transferred out. David has gone to battle, and once it has been a clear manifestation of God, the second not. Now there's a beautiful medrash on this second battle. It says the following: Kivan Shabo HaPlishtim, the Plishtim came toward them, Vero Imotam. The Plishtim were that close, they were able to see one another. There was no more than 4 cubits, 8 feet away. Shnei metrim. Amru lo Yisrael. So Yisrael turned to David and they say, Manu Omdim, what are we standing here for? We can already see the whites of their eyes. What are we supposed to do? Can you imagine? All of Israel is standing and the enemy is right there. Amalahem. What we're going to be learning now is a medrash that explains this last pasuk by Yas David Cain. David did this, Kasher Tzivohu Hashem, as God commanded him. Alright. We will ignore it. We're going to learn Torah even under these difficult circumstances. The pasuk said that David did this kasher tzivo Hashem as God commanded him. You know what God commanded him? What did God command him in the beginning of the, in the pasuk before? You have to wait until you hear the wind rustling. Do you understand what's happening over here? This is going to be a waiting game of such extreme tension. And the Medrash says they already see the whites of the eyes of the enemy, and they turned to David and they said, Ma onu omdim, why are we standing here? Amalahem. So David said to them, Mitzuve ani lo lishot behen. I am commanded from God not to attack them, ad she'er'er roshei ha'ilanot minanim, until I see the tops of the trees shaking. Ela ani, you know what we're going to do? So the army asks him, what are we going to do? So he says, Ela ani vata, me and you, you know what we're going to do? We're going to raise our eyes heavenward. Nitla einenu, let us lift our eyes, El Elokeinu, to God. Kivan shetolu einenem v'kodesh baruch hu, so beautiful, the Medrash says, as soon as they were no longer looking at the whites of the enemy's eyes, but they were looking straight into God's eyes, at that moment, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'malachim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the angels, he gave them the instructions, the wind started blowing, and here comes the a tragic statement, but has become a famous one. Ru'u ma bein Shaul l'David. Take a look at the difference between Shaul and David. Do you remember the first battle that Shaul went out to wage against the Plishtim? All right. That first battle, do you remember what happened in that first battle? Shmuel had told him, wait until I come. And the Navi described, it was chapter 13, 14, that Shmuel seems to be late, he's not coming. And Shaul's men began to disperse. And the Plishtim are coming closer. So it says Shaul didn't wait. He brought the sacrifice and he ordered the attack. As the attack is beginning, Shmuel arrives and he tells him, Niskolta, you made a terrible, terrible mistake. The Malchus is not going to remain in your hand. You had been given a mitzvah, wait until I come. You didn't wait. David is being tested now. He's going to wait. I mean, the Neshama Kendach Eis game. He's facing the enemy. But now, mitzuve ani, I am commanded not to do anything until the signal comes min Hashemayim. He's able to wait under the most difficult of circumstances till the last minute. And then the Rebbeinu Shem turns to the Malachim and he says, Re'u, now you can see, ma bein Shaul l'David, the difference between Shaul and David. David just had that additional ability to wait under such circumstances. I mean, he could have said, listen, pikuach nefesh, you know, pikuach nefesh has become the halacha with which you can be matar, everything, pikuach nefesh, you know, in the country where you can be Yerushalayim away, some Tel Aviv, you know, everything, pikuach nefesh, everything. David over here, of course, could have said, pikuach nefesh, we're being attacked by the enemy. And he says, no, can you imagine the army waiting? But it's more than that.
His men waiting.
That's it. Why did you took the words? They waited with him. Do you understand the power of David's leadership? Ani mitzuve. It means two things. Number one, they can approach him and ask him the question. That too is greatness. Re'u ma bein Shaul David. There was a long period of time during which Shaul's people couldn't even talk to him. They can talk to him. They can ask him the difficult question. And he's able to give them the difficult answer. And they're all able to wait. And then comes the moment of Yeshuat Hashem. What nerves, nerves of steel one has to have. Okay, that's it. We did a chapter. I was trying to do another chapter yesterday. Lo yistayim, next week.